Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to take up a subject that is highly controversial. It is testosterone replacement for men. And actually, recently this was the subject of a seminar that we held at the Hoffman Center. We hold these seminars periodically, usually every month. People can come and hear me together with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin. So look for announcements at drhoffman.com, and you may be able to come and participate. But for those of you who can't, here's a podcast where I'm basically summarizing some of the main points of that presentation. I know that we have listeners in the tri-state area of New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. For you, there's no excuse. You're perfectly capable of driving in or taking public transportation into New York to visit the Hoffman Center and see me and Layla during one of our usually Wednesday night lectures. But for those of you who are across the globe, across the country, we've got many listeners who are far-flung. We're going to talk about testosterone. So this issue has recently been highlighted in a negative way by the A-Rod scandal. Alex Rodriguez, Yankee baseball player, big home run hitter, has recently been embroiled in a controversy where now he's got a one-year complete suspension. There was lurid testimony and a TV interview with Chris Bosh, his erstwhile trainer, basically a guy who allegedly obtained for him all manner of performance-enhancing drugs, or PEDs, including testosterone, which was injected, smeared on, taken in lozenge form. And this represents a form of cheating in sports, getting an unfair competitive advantage. But it's kind of paradoxical. On the one hand, we say, that's really bad. You know, in sports, we can't tolerate this because it offers an unfair advantage. So much in America is about obtaining an advantage. On the one hand, and look, you can argue this both ways. I'm personally against having our athletes use a lot of performance-enhancing drugs because I think it sends a terrible message to the youth of America. We don't want them to use these medications. But we're kind of speaking out of both sides of our mouth when we say, athletes, you've got to remain clean. You have to perform without any external props or aids. And then at the very same time, we cut away to a commercial about Viagra, advertisements in medical journals for kids to take attention deficit disorder drugs to improve their performance. And then, of course, there's the whole low-T business, the business of prescribing pharmaceutical testosterone to men, which is being marketed very heavily. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that. We'll talk a little bit about some of the natural, quote, natural testosterone supporters. I have to say that when it comes to, you know, a lot of men say, I don't want to take testosterone, so what can I take naturally to boost my testosterone? I have to say that I am a proponent of testosterone therapy when it's given correctly in the right context, under medical supervision, and patients are carefully monitored. I am not a big believer in a lot of the, and I really got to call it this, a lot of the junk and the scams out there of various things that purport to raise your testosterone naturally, or if you don't want to go to the doctor, or you want to avoid the stigma or the embarrassment of seeing a medical doctor and getting a prescription, that you can just order something in a plain brown wrapper that arrives discreetly at your doorstep and turns you into a stud and makes you muscular and, oh, by the way, solves all your prostate problems all in one fell swoop. There's a lot of that kind of stuff out there, and I'm not a big fan of it. If we have time, we'll talk a little bit about some of the natural things you can do to enhance testosterone. But the other thing that got testosterone a bad reputation most lately, and this is something that I confronted head-on in the seminar, is an article that appeared in the Journal of the American Medical Association, which happened just sort of at the end of 2013. The study suggested that testosterone therapy might increase the risk of death and certain cardiovascular events. So we started to see headlines like testosterone treatments linked to heart risks in the major news media. And so this is a little bit like, this is a tough year because we started the year with the fish oil causes prostate cancer. That's not the case, and we had to debunk that. And then we had stories about how vitamin supplements are not beneficial and that we should end the debate about supplements, case closed, supplements are worthless. And then we had this study which attacks, to my mind, one of the mainstays of intelligent medicine, which is to provide testosterone where appropriate to aging men. And I'll tell you a little bit about what the study purports to show and why the study is problematic. First of all, this study really flies in the face of much of what we know about testosterone. Testosterone, it started out, the old think was that the reason that men got heart disease before women was because of testosterone. Testosterone was the cause of heart disease, and that's why women got heart disease later than men. Okay, so that was a prevalent attitude for a really long time. So the whole thing was stay away from testosterone, stay away from testosterone. But then a whole lot of studies were done, and they started to realize that the men who were getting heart disease were the men who had very low testosterone. Now, you might say that, and this has been said very often erroneously, that testosterone just declines with aging. It's a natural thing, you know, it just goes down with aging. But actually many studies have shown that healthy men, and it's hard to find a healthy man these days past the age of 55 or 60, but a normal weight man who is not diabetic, who does not have cardiovascular disease, who exercises and eats well, that usually there is a slight decline in testosterone, inevitably. I mean, show me a 95-year-old, even in, quote, relatively good health, you're going to see a guy with a little lower testosterone. But there is no reason why a 50- or 55-year-old or 65-year-old or 70-year-old who is in vigorous good health should have low testosterone. So what they have found is that men who have diabetes, men who have heart attacks, men who have cardiovascular risk, indeed men who have prostate cancer, are often men who have decidedly low testosterone. So it's even been proposed that, well, it sounds a little bit gross, but if you lose your erections, you might be more prone to cardiovascular disease. It's actually, you know, we look at HDL and cholesterol and we test people six ways to Sunday, but a pretty good indicator of whether you're going to be at risk for cardiovascular disease is you're not able to get an erection, you're having a lot of problems with erectile dysfunction. Maybe, just maybe, you ought to go in and get your testosterone checked because testosterone might be, and I'm not making this one up myself, but it's apropos. Testosterone may be a dipstick for cardiovascular risk. These days, I bought a new car, and I said, where's the dipstick? They said, there's no dipstick. It's all electronic. They'll tell you how much oil you have on the electronic dashboard. But in the old days, we used to go under the hood, and we used to, you know, reach in for the dipstick, pull it out, and see where the oil level was before, adding oil or changing oil. And testosterone, if it's low on the dipstick, might actually be a sign of cardiovascular risk that is as important as cholesterol or triglyceride or blood sugar level or insulin level, because it correlates beautifully with all those risks. So this study was really surprising. It's a perfect analogy to the Women's Health Initiative study, which came out in the 1990s. And again, there they had the supposition in that study that estrogen was beneficial for the heart. They thought estrogen was really going to protect the heart. And then after doing this study for a short period of time, a year or two, they said, oh, my God, the hormones that we're giving to these women, they're getting more heart disease. So the estrogen was thought to be causative of the heart disease. And the word went out to half the population of America, the women, that estrogen was dangerous, and millions and tens of millions of women abandoned their hormone replacement, went through terrible hot flashes, some of them, and felt awful, but at least they felt they were protecting their hearts. Well, it turned out that when they reanalyzed the data, what they found was that indeed these artificial hormones, these bad estrogens that were trying to mimic natural estrogen, that they didn't really work as well to protect the heart. No, by the way, they did the study in a population of women who were already older, who probably already had heart disease. They started hormone replacement therapy at 66 instead of at the time of menopause, which might be more appropriate, before heart disease would develop. And so estrogen and hormones in general have a slight blood thickening effect. They, you know, we know that women who take birth control pills have a slightly higher risk of strokes and usually not heart attacks in younger women, but strokes can occur because of the blood thickening effect, especially of high doses of artificial hormones. And lo and behold, that happened in the 66-year-old, so they rapidly curtailed the study and concluded hormones are bad for the heart. But it turns out that when they reanalyzed the data, they found that in younger women, hormones were protective against heart disease. Well, a sort of similar thing is happening in this study. And so let's take a look at what's wrong with this study. By the way, if you look at a man who has low testosterone, and you look at a man who has type 2 diabetes, it's actually very hard to distinguish one from the other, because both of them will look sort of flabby. They're generally going to have a soft, they're sort of like, a good example is the Pillsbury Doughboy. The Pillsbury Doughboy, or at least before they changed the image of the Pillsbury, I hear they slimmed him down. They did a little, makeover on the Pillsbury Doughboy. But the Pillsbury Doughboy, you know, you could push your finger into his belly and he kind of, you know, giggled with a high-pitched giggle. Definitely low testosterone, right? So, if you look at a man with low testosterone or type 2 diabetes, they're virtually indistinguishable. They have insulin resistance. They have mid-abdominal fat. Sometimes they're fatigued, grouchy, lethargic, depressed. That's, you know, suggests that those conditions may coexist, and often they do. But coming back to this flawed study, actually, if you want to read a good analysis of it, go to Life Extension and put in flawed testosterone analysis. They've got a good rundown of that, so I'm borrowing some of my talking points from Life Extension. What they note very astutely is that among the problems, there are a lot of problems with this study. You know, why did this study turn out to be kind of weird, that it showed an increase in the risk of heart disease? Well, let's take a look at the men in the study. The men in the study were pretty lousy condition. High percentage of them had diabetes, a high percentage of them were obese, and they all had angiograms as a prelude to the study. Now, you generally don't do an angiogram on a healthy person who doesn't have any risk whatsoever of cardiovascular disease. So clearly the individuals in this study were somewhat at higher risk to be selected to do an angiogram. They didn't just take really healthy folks and give them an angiogram. So these were individuals, men, average age, you know, low 60s, some older, some younger. who'd had an angiogram as a prelude to the study. And some of them turned out had heart disease, and some of them turned out did not have heart disease. But then they were given testosterone or not given testosterone. And it turned out that pretty quickly it developed that a higher percentage of the men who got the testosterone had strokes or heart attacks or developed heart problems than the ones who did not develop, the ones who did not receive the testosterone. So, well, that's pretty clear cut, right? I mean, the testosterone didn't do them any good, so, whoa, that's not good. Well, one of the problems in this study is that the average testosterone levels rose in the men who got the testosterone from 175 to an average of 332, which is an improvement, but that's still a very lousy testosterone. And when I treat men with natural testosterone, my goal is to get them 600, 700, 800. Maybe not 1,200 or 1,500, that's too high. But I like to hit the sweet spot at a higher level than 332. So from the study results, which, by the way, weren't incomplete, because only 60% of the study subjects receiving testosterone had a follow-up blood test to assess their testosterone levels. Incredibly, that's really weird. Is, you know, how are you going to know if it works? You just get like a standard dose, one size fits all. But among those who were tested, there was a very slight improvement in the testosterone. And so maybe, just maybe, they didn't receive enough testosterone to get the appreciable health benefits. The other problem is that they received what I think is absolutely the wrong type of testosterone. They received unnatural testosterone, the vast majority of them. Only 1% of them got the kind of testosterone that I prescribe, which is a topical preparation of custom compounded natural testosterone. Many of these men received testosterone injections. That's not real testosterone. That's a synthetic form of testosterone. The problem with testosterone injections is that it causes peaks and valleys of testosterone, because if you apply it every day, you get a pretty steady state of your testosterone, pretty much like your body makes. But if you get a shot like once every 10 days or once every 2 weeks, you're going to have high testosterone for a while, and then it's going to go down. You'll have low testosterone. And oh, by the way, one of the things that that does is that tends to thicken the blood. Many men who receive injectable testosterone see an increase in their blood counts. And when you see an increase in your blood count, your blood gets thicker. It's kind of like the difference between, chicken broth and pea soup. Pea soup is thicker. It's going to have more of a tendency to blood clots. Strokes and heart attacks are forms of blood clots. So the unnatural testosterone was used. Another issue is that with this treatment group, the treatment group may have had low testosterone for many years prior to getting the testosterone. So, in effect, the damage was done. And often in studies that don't show benefit, it's because people are too far gone. So they tried to debunk vitamin C by giving it to end-stage cancer patients in a study done at the Mayo Clinic. They said, see what happens here? These patients didn't get any better. But they'd already failed every form of chemo and radiation and surgery. And then, as a last resort, they were given vitamin C. But, oh, not enough vitamin C again, 10 grams orally. And then that was thought to be the death knell forever for vitamin C therapy. Again, an unfair way of assessing its effectiveness. So those are some of the problems with the JAMA study. Also, one of the big problems with that study is, and it really was surprising to the editors of the Journal of the American Medical Association, because they admitted that many other previous studies had shown benefits of testosterone. For example, they did a big meta-analysis. That is a study of many studies that found that testosterone improved walking and oxygen consumption in patients with heart failure. It also improved their blood sugar and insulin. So no question that in that condition, heart failure, a little different than patients who have heart attacks, because typically heart failure patients have weak hearts. They have fluid overload. And testosterone seemed to, the heart's a muscle. And testosterone seems to help that muscle work better. This also may account for a sex differential in congestive heart failure. Surely there are many men who get congestive heart failure. But it is actually a condition that's a female-predominant condition. And women lack testosterone, and therefore they may have hearts that pump less efficiently, resulting in a greater likelihood of congestive heart failure. Also, here's a crazy thing, is that this study was done at the VA. A previous study done just before this study at the same, VA hospital system showed that death in testosterone-treated men was 10.3% compared to 20.7% in untreated men. So why is there a difference between those two studies? I mean, they're both done at the VA. One study shows that testosterone was harmful. Another study showed it was beneficial. I think one of the reasons is that they may have selected the population better. They may have done a better job of selecting men who were less likely to have a harmful response from the testosterone. We know that testosterone administration, according to studies, improves angina. Angina, pain, heart pain related to exertion. We know that it also may forestall toe amputation in diabetics. Diabetics have terrible circulation of their feet. Their blood vessels are all clogged, and they are prone to amputations, first of the toes, then the feet, then sometimes up to the knees. It's terrible. Testosterone really promotes circulation, not just to a certain part of your anatomy, but throughout your body. And it may enhance levels of a critical substance called nitric oxide. Nitric oxide is the name of the game when it comes to erections. It's the thing that's generated by erectile dysfunction medications. And testosterone appears to enhance nitric oxide, which is a good thing when it comes to opening up your blood vessels. And I've actually treated some patients with pretty darn near the need for amputation. I hate when that happens because it's such brinkmanship. It's like you have to keep examining the toes and examining the toes and examining the toes because you don't want the patient to develop gangrene. But with testosterone and better diet and sometimes chelation therapy, patients with diabetic ulcers that don't heal or pre-gangrenous toes, the toes turn pink again and the blood flows to the extremities. So this can be a very, very important tool in the treatment of not just type 2 diabetics, but insulin-dependent diabetics. Very important phenomenon. So the other thing is, as I said earlier, most studies agree that low testosterone is a very reliable predictor of heart disease risk. So that if you see a guy with low testosterone, that is a concern. So, I have to say, in my own practice, I look for patients to get testosterone replacement if they have heart disease. I don't shun it. I don't stay away from it. I actually encourage it because what does it do? You take a man who has low testosterone, is fat and demotivated, often depressed, and chubby, and you give them testosterone, and they perk up, they become more energetic, they start considering exercise, and the exercise actually is more successful at building muscle. We know that under the influence of testosterone, it's a no-brainer. That's why bodybuilders cheat and use testosterone to build their muscles. That's why athletes use testosterone. But older individuals who are pudgy and have poor blood sugar control, enhanced cardiovascular risk, testosterone acts as kind of a hamburger helper for an exercise program. A, it motivates them to do more exercise. You feel more motivated in general when you have testosterone. But B, it sort of it enhances the beneficial results to muscles. When you build more muscles, you have better blood sugar control. It's virtually impossible to be diabetic if you have a good fat to lean ratio, a low percentage of body fat. So that is really, really helpful. Also, Sometimes what we're able to do is we'll put, you know, men will say, gee, I don't really want to be on this for a long time. I'm concerned about my prostate. And there is a real concern about prostate. I'll talk a little bit about that. But we'll put men on testosterone for a while to jumpstart their metabolism. They then begin an exercise program. They then feel better. They have less body fat. By the way, testosterone does another thing that helps the heart. It actually helps to improve sleep. And men who don't sleep well have more cardiovascular disease. The stress of insomnia increases cortisol, worsens insulin resistance. You can make someone diabetic by just sleep deprivation. You know, your metabolism will go all haywire if you have sleep deprivation. So if you deepen sleep, testosterone can actually help you sleep better and deeper. Then you can actually overcome metabolic syndrome. It really can make a difference. So this is, I think, an important tool for doctors to use. Let's talk a little bit about the prostate, because a lot of men are mortified about using testosterone because they know that it has something to do with prostate cancer. So what are the facts about that? Well, it has been shown that men who are older, who have higher levels of testosterone, you would think they would have higher levels of prostate cancer, but they don't. They have approximately the same or slightly better risk of prostate cancer than men who have low levels of testosterone. So getting prostate cancer is not simply a matter of you have high levels of testosterone. It is true that if you are carrying a prostate cancer, that you can make it grow with testosterone. That's why when we start a program with men, we make sure that we check a PSA. There's a lot of controversy about checking PSAs, but as a safety measure, you need to examine a man and do a PSA level prior to instituting testosterone therapy, because if the PSA is kind of high, maybe that's a caution flag. Maybe that's a guy who you don't want to play around with testosterone. Or alternatively, if you start a man with a normal PSA on testosterone and the PSA goes up really fast, that may be because you're stimulating a low-grade prostate cancer. Now, the good news about that is that if testosterone increases your PSA, and if you're discovered to have prostate cancer, the prostate cancer that is, I won't say caused by, but brought to light by the testosterone therapy is more amenable to cure. Okay? Because if it's responsive to a hormone, it's more likely to be responsive to therapy. It's only hormone unresponsive prostate cancer that grows really rapidly and becomes life-threatening and dangerous. So, of course, that would be small consolation to a man who develops prostate cancer because he's been indiscriminately prescribed testosterone. The concern I have is that, you know, what this VA study tells us is that you have to be careful and select patients carefully for testosterone therapy, that it's not a panacea. I think what we're seeing now a lot is direct-to-consumer advertisement. There's a lot of, basically chop shops, doctor's offices where they, you know, you just pay a fee and they give you a testosterone prescription. They don't do their proper due diligence to make sure that you're a suitable candidate for that. You could be on the verge of a heart attack. And if you get testosterone injections, the wrong form of testosterone, by the way, testosterone injections are more lucrative for the doctor because the doctor can charge. If I prescribe testosterone at a pharmacy, I don't get a kickback or money. The pharmacy makes the money. So despite that fact, if it's safer for men, that's what I do. I give the, I don't give it as a form of, injection, although that would, accrue to my bottom line. I give it as a topical cream. Occasionally men will require injections, men who have a very, very low testosterone, but usually we try to avoid that. But, there are, places now that are unscrupulous. Also, the pharmaceutical industry is pushing this with direct-to-consumer ads on TV that tell men to get checked out for low T. And, maybe that some men are not suitable for that, or that that's, you know, not the best way to go. And that's you know, this VA study is perhaps a caution flag on that. But I have to say that, you know, I think testosterone is an extremely useful tool for men who are at risk of cardiovascular disease, men who've had heart attacks. They want to avert further heart attacks. Certainly men who have congestive heart failure, men who have circulatory problems, we look for the opportunity to use testosterone. So this study is not going to daunt me in my current practice. Now, let's talk about natural testosterone enhancement. I have to say that a lot of this is really, really suspect. And the reason for the success of that is a lot of men, they're either afraid to use testosterone, so they want to use something, quote, natural. And they think that just because it's natural, it's going to be safe. Well, let's suppose that it really does work. Most of these things don't work. But let's suppose it does work. It raises your testosterone. You're still going to be subject to the same risk as if you took outside testosterone. I mean, it raises your testosterone. So if you, let's say you've had recently prostate cancer and we decide not to give you testosterone, we'll probably wouldn't want to give you something that would raise your testosterone, quote, naturally either. But there's more and more thought about quality of life in men who've successfully undergone treatment for prostate cancer. And if the prostate cancer has been successfully treated, it's been gone for a while, more and more doctors, urologists that I know, are saying with the caution flag, monitoring the PSA, the PSA is exceedingly low and has been stable for a long time, you can give testosterone because testosterone can enhance the quality of life and can forestall death. You know, one of the problems with prostate cancer treatment is because you take the prostate out and sometimes you block men's hormones, their testosterone goes way down. And men die younger because they're depressed, lethargic, sedentary, they get pudgy and diabetic, and then they succumb not to the prostate cancer, but to another problem. There's a trade-off there. So that's one of the reasons why statistics are not so good for early aggressive treatment for prostate cancer. You may protect the man from death from prostate cancer, but they'll succumb to another disease. Same result, they're dead at 65, and that ain't good. So, but let's get back to the discussion of the natural agents for testosterone enhancement. What are some of these things? Some of them contain arginine. And arginine is something that may mimic the effects of some Viagra-like medications. But you got to take a lot of it. 12 grams in some studies. That would be 24 pills. Also appears that taking lots and lots of arginine can increase free radical production in the body. So maybe you don't want to take that on an ongoing basis. That would be like a man who uses Viagra every day in and day out. Well, there's a lot of wear and tear and stress on the free radical suppression system, the antioxidant defenses, if you do that, and that may not be so good. By the way, the arginine doesn't raise your testosterone. It may just dilate your blood vessels, but doesn't raise your testosterone. What about things like, you know, they have picturesque names, that's some of the natural things for testosterone. Horny goat's weed is an example. It has not really been shown except in a few very limited studies to raise testosterone. Sometimes these substances are suspect. The one that I do like to a certain extent, I think there are some potential benefits. Maca may somewhat increase your testosterone. I actually think it increases your stamina and energy and may have a mood-enhancing effect. But it seems to have a little bit of a sexually stimulating effect or energizing effect. It may also do the same thing in women. Women, much harder to arouse the libido through artificial means. Even testosterone in women has not been shown conclusively to reliably increase libido. So these natural things, you know, zinc and salt palmetto and various types of phytonutrients. I'm not a tribulus is another one of them. A Vena sativa, which is a wild oats. I mean, you hear the expression, sow your wild oats. That sounds good, but wild oat extract, I'm not sure that's going to do a heck of a lot. Saffron has been proposed as a, quote, natural aphrodisiac. Not sure if it's really going to be that effective or if it's going to literally raise your testosterone and get the metabolic effects that you want from real testosterone that is prescribed medically because, the only way you can get testosterone is via medical prescription under supervision of a doctor unless you get it illicitly in a locker room or, you know, through a criminal underground. So, I have to say that one of the ways, if you have low testosterone, you want to raise your testosterone, one of the natural ways to do that is to sleep adequately. If you sleep adequately, your testosterone may go up. Sleep deprivation actually causes a lot of testosterone suppression in the men I see. Sometimes it's due to shift work. I've seen it in airline pilots. I've seen it in firemen and law enforcement individuals, night workers. The shift work murders your testosterone. So if you, and it's hard to avoid that, if you're on that kind of schedule. Your circadian rhythm gets all bollocked up and you don't get adequate sleep and rest and it kills your testosterone. Another thing that kills your testosterone is stress. Anxiety kills your testosterone. A defeating attitude in life, you know, you walk around and, you know, your boss is constantly hammering at you and you can't do anything about it. If you're whooped all the time, your testosterone may decline. So get yourself out of those types of life situations, bad jobs, bad relationships. Also, lack of physical exercise will do it, but overexertion will do it too. If you, you know, are training for an ultra marathon and you run, 30 miles a day, you can kill your testosterone pretty effectively. But also if you sit on the couch and do nothing, you lower your testosterone. Aerobic exercise, modest effect on testosterone, but the thing that really seems to increase your testosterone is, strength training. Weightlifting actually promotes higher levels of testosterone. So you can actually naturally increase your testosterone. Some men prefer that approach when they have low testosterone just to work through it naturally. If you get rid of excess body fat, that will help your testosterone levels because body fat acts like a sponge to hold back your testosterone from your bloodstream. And if you lose, 10 or 15 pounds of excess body fat, your body may produce the same amount of testosterone, but the testosterone have less places to hide. And instead of getting soaked up by your fat cells, it'll circulate in your blood and your blood levels of testosterone will increase. That's one of the reasons why if men are successful at programs, we can initiate testosterone, but they lose a lot of weight. And then in some cases, we take them off the testosterone. We go, lo and behold, testosterone is better. Another thing I want to say about testosterone is that if you're sick, testosterone can be lowered. So if you have a very severe inflammatory condition like ulcerative colitis or rheumatoid arthritis, your testosterone often will get low or painful condition. And what's interesting is that testosterone administration can help cure those conditions because testosterone has anti-inflammatory properties. So in inflammatory disorders, I like to give testosterone. And I can even do that sometimes in younger patients because we do it temporarily. We would prefer not to give testosterone to men who are contemplating childbearing because it acts as a birth control pill and it may have long-term effects inhibiting fertility. So in those cases, we might use something that creates a signal from the pituitary to the testes to produce testosterone. The drug is called Clomid, and Clomid is useful in younger men, and we sometimes will use that to avert problems associated with fertility. It works quite nicely to bring up testosterone, but it's actually unusual that we have to use testosterone in younger men. Mostly the men who are candidates for this are men who are 45, 50, and beyond. And in that case, the use of natural testosterone that you rub into your skin, it's a topical agent. It's compounded by a compounding pharmacy. It's bioidentical, is the route to take. So, you know, once again, I got to say, testosterone's getting a bad rap in the press after some studies, which I think are not the best studies. Actually, one in particular, most of the other studies showed testosterone is beneficial for heart disease. And, of course, there's, you know, the A-Rod story and sports doping with performance-enhancing drugs that give testosterone a bad name. We really should have a more objective view of this useful tool for improving men's health and reducing the risk of cardiovascular disease. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. You've just listened to a free podcast brought to you by yours truly and the Hoffman Center. F-R-E-E is my favorite four-letter word, but these podcasts do involve time and money to produce, and so in the spirit of defraying some of our very real production costs and to keep these podcasts flowing, I'd like to ask you to consider a couple of things. First, if you like what you're hearing, please share these podcasts with your friends and relatives. Our object is to continue the spectacular growth of the Intelligent Medicine Podcast with the goal of attaining 250,000 podcast downloads per month in 2014. I know that with the help of dedicated listeners like you, it'll happen. Second, go to drhoffman.com and click on the store and consider buying your supplements via a convenient internet portal or call the Hoffman Center and talk to one of our friendly supplement advisors. We only stock the very highest quality supplements, some of which are very hard to find elsewhere, the very same supplements that I talk about here on Intelligent Medicine and that I prescribe to my patients at the Hoffman Center. And finally, consider becoming a patient at the Hoffman Center. I can personally perform an extensive workup on you, applying all the intelligent medicine principles that you hear about on these podcasts, or alternatively, make an appointment with Layla Mutin, our Hoffman Center nutritionist. You already know her as a frequent contributor on intelligent medicine, and she'll provide you with expert advice on diet and supplements. Anyway, thanks for listening and continue enjoying our Intelligent Medicine podcasts.